Welcome back to the Casa Connection podcast. It's great to be in your ears for another episode, and we hope you've been enjoying the content that we've been putting out on our podcast feed. If you have not subscribed, please subscribe, and if you are wanting to visit our website, we'd love for you to visit it at casashaw.org. That's Casa, C-A-S-A, Shaw, S-H-A-W.org. I'm Jeff Warren. I'm here with my good, awesome buddy and my boss, the executive director of Casa Shaw, Tracy Heisler. How you doing, Tracy?
I'm good, Jeff, and that was such a nice intro. Good buddy, old pal.
Well, we have a lot of conversations offline where we talk about foster care, we talk about families, we talk about just stories within our lives, you know, even our personal lives. Before we hit the record button, we were talking about stories in our personal lives, just about how domestic relationships work, they don't work at times, and just how, you know, we move forward.
And how those impact how we move in the world.
Yeah.
And one of the areas that we've been talking about recently is domestic violence. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Yep.
I started my career back in 1988 as a crisis counselor for sexual assault and domestic violence victims. And it's amazing how much has changed. Back in the day, I had a pager, and when there was a call, I would call into a central location. They would tell me, "You're going to meet a mom and three kids at the Piggly Wiggly in, you know, Martinsburg."
The Piggly Wiggly.
I'd start driving and pick them up. And in retrospect, that was super dangerous. What if their spouse had, you know, decided to follow them and catch them there? But that's how we did it. And then would take them to the shelter and get them into the intake. And then my part would end. When I moved into the space of child advocacy in 1999, domestic violence was a double hit for mainly women that I dealt with on my caseloads. At that time, if a woman was a victim of domestic violence, their children would be removed from them. And if they refused to leave the abuser, then their parental rights could be terminated and the kids would go up for adoption.
Like you said, a lot's changed, obviously, since then, because that's not necessarily how it is now.
For sure. But I mean, I remember one mom who was an excellent mother who was so bonded to her children, but was not in a space where she was ready to leave her husband, and she lost her kids. Her rights were terminated, and they were put up for adoption. Here in New Jersey, over the last several years, there's been a recognition of the double harm, the harm to the victim, the harm to the children. And one of our founders, Judge Tom Dilts, actually was instrumental here in the state of sitting on the Domestic Violence Task Force to see how we could be doing this work differently.
He's on our board of trustees, by the way, which is fantastic that he's a part of our organization.
We are so lucky to have him. Oh my gosh, in so many ways. But now here in New Jersey, if someone is a victim of domestic violence, the children are not necessarily removed unless they were directly victimized. And a safety plan is put into place so that the victim is not punished for being a victim, right?
Yeah. Well, like you said, a lot has changed. A lot has changed over the years. A lot has changed in terms of the statistics as well with regard to domestic violence. I mean, you take a look at the national averages, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. So during 1 year, this equates to more than 10 million women and men that are abused physically. This isn't the mental abuse. This isn't the physical abuse. This isn't the digital abuse necessarily, but 10 million individuals. It's not just a phenomenon, but it is a tragic just foundation, unfortunately, of what a lot of families go through and consistently go through, and the cycle of that as well. And I know that here at Casa Shaw and a lot of different Casa programs too, not necessarily trying to break the cycle, but provide resources too, in order to help children in particular, but help families. How do you get out of that cycle? And I think that's an interesting topic as well.
It is, but I don't know if people listening understand how prevalent this is. One in three women, one in four men.
Yeah.
And I personally, I've never been hit, but I have known men and women in my life, people close to me,
same here,
who have experienced domestic violence. And not even just physical violence, financial violence, where people have, have, you know, are being controlled monetarily, emotional violence, all kinds of cutting off their relationships with other people and isolating them. When I was very young, my father gave me excellent advice. And he said, you know, I don't care who you marry. I don't care, you know, where you go, but always have a bank account of your own in your own name.
Yeah.
Put money in it, because you never know if you've got to have resources to go. And what wise counsel that was to have my own resources available.
Absolutely. To me. It's also important to put out there that domestic violence does not discriminate. It doesn't discriminate by age. It doesn't discriminate by race. It doesn't discriminate by religion. Domestic violence does not discriminate. And I think more and more folks need to realize that and understand that, because I think there is a certain belief and philosophy that, yeah, domestic violence only happens with, quote, these type of individuals, exactly, or these individuals over here, or these type of families. Culturally, it doesn't discriminate at all. People need to realize that, Tracy.
Absolutely. And it's across the board. And it is, it's such a shame-based crime. Nobody wants to admit that their partner beats them.
Right.
Nobody wants to admit that their partner controls them. And one of the things that I struggled with in working with these families is the, why don't you just go? And not understanding what all of the anchors are that keep people tethered in those relationships.
I remember growing up where people would say that in the 80s and the 90s, well, why don't you just leave? That simple question of, okay, your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whoever it is hitting you. You are receiving physical violence. Why don't you just pack up and go? Well, if it was that easy, folks,
they would have.
We wouldn't have these 10 million individuals suffering from this on an annual basis.
And honestly, women are the most likely to be killed leaving an intimate partner violent relationship.
Yeah.
That's when they're most likely to be murdered. And even if the thought of your own murder doesn't scare you, there is still, what if they get the children? What if they go into court and lie and they make you look like you're the crazy person? I've heard that from many people who've gone to counseling. Many times batterers are incredibly charismatic and will bring people over to their side of things and make the victim out to be crazy, vengeful, you know.
We've seen it plenty of times here in our CASA program.
We have, for sure.
Yes.
And so I guess my counsel, if you're listening to this podcast because you're thinking of, you know, you are a child advocate and you want to know how this interacts with families, that's actually one of the important things, is to listen to the victims. Make sure that they are getting referrals to domestic violence shelters where there's trauma-informed therapies and training involved in helping to deal with them. And it's not just the victims, it's the children as well.
Exactly.
Here in New Jersey, our domestic violence shelters have children's programming to help the kids process and work through. And I remember when I was doing this work in West Virginia many years ago, we were at the shelter one day and one of the batterers showed up at the shelter screaming for the woman. And so when we were like, how did he know where we are?
Right.
Because the shelters are secret. He had been there as a child. So this was a behavior that he learned as a child from his father and his mother's relationship. And that's why we have to break that cycle. Therapy is a really core component of that, making sure that victims have access to housing and to financial resources till they get on their feet. I know we have a strong partnership with our domestic violence shelter in Warren County in particular.
Here in New Jersey.
Yes, when we get an overage of winter coats, I'll take them for the ladies. When we get a bunch of suitcases in, I'll take them for the ladies. And toiletry items, because they need those foundational things to move into the next stage of independence and not have to go back because they don't have the money for a deposit.
And that's part of that anchor that you were talking about earlier. It's why individuals can't just get up and leave, because there are certain anchors that will keep them there, whether it is the luggage that they need. They can't just walk around in a garbage bag like a lot of foster children do, going from placement to placement. You know, they need something. They need that deposit for an apartment that they're going to be getting, whatever housing it is, transportation needs as well is huge.
Absolutely.
So these anchors, I think it's important for people to realize that, no, you just can't get up and leave. It's not that simple for domestic violence victims.
And one of the other spaces that it might be hard to understand from the outside looking in, it's almost, we used to joke about there being a batterer's handbook because they follow the same pattern.
Right.
And one of the very first things is isolating you from your family, severing those relationships with your friends, and then breaking down your self-esteem. You're stupid. You're ugly. Nobody else would want you.
Right.
And then cycling back after an explosion of, oh, you know, I love you. I'm sorry. You know, it'll never happen again. But you are so filled with so much shame and self-doubt and feeling so isolated and estranged from all the people that you cut off to make this one happy. It's really hard to go back and swallow your pride and ask for help and acknowledge that these things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to read some statistics really quick to help give our listeners out there a better picture of individuals in our community that do feel that shame that you were just talking about. 35.8% of New Jersey women and 27.4% of New Jersey men experience intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner rape, and or intimate partner stalking in their lifetime. That is a significant portion of our population here in New Jersey who inevitably end up feeling that shame. And again, it's why the cycle just is so difficult to break, as what we have been talking about. There were 52 domestic violence homicides in New Jersey in 2016, comprising of 14% of total homicides, 63,420 domestic violence offenses reported by the police in 2016 as well. Women were the victims in 74% of 2016 domestic violence cases. Again, folks, this stuff doesn't discriminate. These are the numbers. These are folks that feel shame about what is happening to them in their lives. It is so very difficult for them to take action, but thankfully we do have resources. So make phone calls, folks. Talk with these individuals and resources, resource organizations within our community that can really help provide some direction and acceptance too. That's a key word. Acceptance, I think, Tracy, for what happens to victims, it's a real thing. And we need to accept the fact that this is happening and we can really help them.
And if you don't believe us, watch the ID channel where it's always the guy who, the intimate partner who's ended up being the perpetrator.
Exactly.
I'm watching this crazy show on Hulu called Candy, where it's actually the wife who's the crazy nutter who acts as her friend. But unfortunately, domestic violence is insidious and in our culture. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about toxic masculinity and this idea of upholding this patriarchal kind of system.
Yeah.
And
it's been a more prevalent theme for sure as of late. Yeah.
And it shouldn't be controversial to say that people have the right to not be hit in their home.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be controversial to say that people should have control over their own resources and their own body. It shouldn't be controversial to say that there should be laws and consequences for people who harm others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get the National Domestic Violence Hotline number for folks out there where if they're listening to this, they can write it down or they can just save this podcast episode and refer to it in the future if they need it. Tracy, do you have that number?
I do. If you need help, it's 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 1-800-799-7233, or you can go online to thehotline.org, thehotline.org.
There you go.
And, you know, take a stand against domestic violence and support victims and support their children in breaking free of this cycle of violence and learning a new way to move forward in the world.
Support organizations, too, that advocate for victims. It's something we need more of within our communities, within our neighborhoods. It's not hard to do. It's not hard to do. And or become a CASA volunteer where you can help a foster child who has likely seen abuse, been abused, have been neglected as well. And our CASA volunteers are extremely, extremely important parts of their lives. And our success rate is great. I love bragging about our success rate. Tracy, really quick, we have, it's well over 90% of our recommendations that are accepted by the family court judges.
Yeah, 94%.
And become a CASA volunteer, CASASHA.org, I should say. And follow us on the interwebs out there. You can follow us on Twitter, on Instagram as well, at CASA_Shaw. And like our Facebook page, search us out there. We would love for you to follow us and like that page and interact with us with our content. And I think that's gonna wrap up this particular podcast. Tracy, do you have anything else before we head out of here?
No, just be safe, have a great day, and enjoy the fall. Pumpkin season is here.
Yes. Pumpkin spice is back in our lives here, Tracy. I don't know about you. I'm not the biggest pumpkin spice fan, but every now and then I'll have some.
Once in the fall, I'm good. But yeah. I did order witches for Halloween, and they're being delivered today. They're three little witches.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Folks, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this CASA Connection episode. We will catch you on the next one. Take care.
Bye-bye, y'all.